Hi everyone, welcome. Thanks for tuning in, and I'm so excited to share my special guest with you this week. Her name is Paula. Paula has two YouTube channels, The Witch's Cauldron and Bull Run Paranormal. The Witch's Cauldron has over 11,000 subscribers and is for witches, Wiccans, pagans, like-minded folk, and anyone really who wants to learn more about any of this stuff. So it focuses more on spellcasting, rituals, pagan holidays, Wicca, tarot, astrology, moon cycles, and so much more. You can find so much detailed, really good information on her channel, including meditations and also coursework if you want a deeper learning and understanding. Her second channel, Bull Run Paranormal, focuses more on ghost investigations, the paranormal, mediumship, and also the occult. Paula herself has been practicing Wicca for 18 years. She's an advanced priestess of tradition of the Witch's Circle, which is her coven. She's a herbalist, Reiki master, psychic medium, and she's also practiced tarot, astrology, and has been a paranormal investigator for 15 years. She's also worked with the Catholic Church as an exorcist on cases involving demonic possession and has collaborated with John Zaffis, who he had started the sci-fi paranormal reality TV show Haunted Collector, and he runs the Paranormal and Demonology Research Society of New England. They worked together on a case involving over 200 haunted dolls. That sounds terrifying. We cover so much in this episode, including Paula's journey, more about Wicca and pagan traditions, divination tools, white magic versus black magic, what it is, cryptids, fairies, elementals, also known as the Fae, and so much more. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy. Hi, Paula. How are you?
I am well. How are you today?
Good. I'm super excited to speak with you. Like we were chatting before, over quarantine for me, I kind of fell into this rabbit hole of different YouTube searches, and I'm so happy that I came across your videos and your channel, and you have so much information. You're so knowledgeable, and I'm so excited to speak with you today.
Oh, thank you so much. Your words are so kind. I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you. So if you want to start off a little bit by sharing some of your journey, kind of how it all began, what inspired you to start your YouTube channel, and even if you've always kind of had this knowing that this was kind of your calling, just sharing this, or if it's something that you recently picked up.
Well, I kind of stumbled into my path in a kind of an odd way. My oldest stepson had a girlfriend who was getting into Wicca. And I absolutely adored this girl. He went to high school with her. And she was just such a lovely soul. And I wanted to get something for her first Yule / Christmas. But I didn't know what to buy for a Wiccan because I had no real, other than like the show Charmed, I had no reference into what Wicca was or anything like that. And so to buy her the gifts, I had to do some research. And when I started doing the research is when I found books by like Scott Cunningham and Raymond Buckland and Janet and Stuart Farrar. And it just clicked. It just absolutely flipped a switch in my little brain. And I'm like, this is where I need to go. I had been going through a separation and tough divorce, and I had always relied on my primitive Baptist background and my faith, my Christian faith, to get me through things. And I had a pastor tell me, you can't get divorced because it's a sin, even though my husband was committing adultery. And I was like, that's not, God doesn't want me to be unhappy. So that right. is why Wicca just absolutely opened my mind, opened my doors, and gave me more control of my own power and my own destiny. Right. And then, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, that sounds like it kind of forced you onto your path, right?
It did. You know, it's like I say serendipity steps in a lot. And things and people get put in your path for a reason. And it's up to you to open your eyes to see when the universe is giving you a wake-up call. And that was one of my wake-up calls. And just, you know, back in the day of like the old quote-unquote meetup groups. I don't know if you're old enough to remember those or not. there was a local pagan meetup group, and I just happened to go to one of the meetups and met up with somebody that I had known right after high school. And she's like, oh, I found this great shop and I'm going to a full moon ritual. Do you want to go with me? And I'm like, heck yeah. Cause at that point I was a solitary. And, that's where I found the tradition that I studied with. I instantly clicked with the high priestess there, and that started my journey. I started a journey of about 3 years of intense study.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, wow, with the kind of the intensity that you kind of went in with it too. You kind of just knew that it was, you know, your calling.
Yeah, I'm a Leo. Once you make up our minds, that's it. You know, it's like you can't stop me once I start. And I ended up continuing with my studies. I went through five levels of study in the trad, with the fifth level actually having three levels within it. Plus, I went through herbalism. I took astrology classes. My HP is a master herbalist. The head high priest at the time is a certified tarot and astrology master. I'm a Reiki master. So I did a lot of intense searching and a lot of intense study over a course of 3 years. And that's how I got so firmly into my path. And then after that is when I discovered my love for the paranormal. And I started embracing my abilities and the fact that I've been able to see spirits since I was four. But we were always told, well, don't talk about it because people are going to think you're crazy. And at that point is when I started embracing that and developing my abilities and communicating with spirit and things like that.
Wow, that's awesome. So do you believe that you always had that kind of connection with seeing spirit this whole time? You just kind of weren't in the right space for it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember vividly the first time I saw spirit when I was 4 years old. And I saw at my grandmother's old farm, I saw a man standing at the top of the stairs, had a chaw tobacco in his mouth, and he had like a fedora hat on. And my eldest sister, I was like, Sezzy, who's that man? And she looked up and she said, that's Grandpap. It's okay. Don't worry about it. He comes around every once in a while. So it's like my sisters, my mother, my grandmothers, they all had abilities.
Wow. So it's like a lineage almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm from Appalachia, and it's a completely different kind of culture because there are still remnants of the beliefs in the, from our roots, like our Scots, Irish, Welsh, English roots, and even Germanic roots that followed us. And it's still part of the culture down there where they have these quote unquote superstitions and things like that, that are actually things that they would do, are part of like old pagan practices.
Wow.
And they didn't even realize, I didn't even realize it until I started studying. It's like, wow, I didn't know we did that back in the day because that was a leftover from pagan rituals years and years and years ago. So It's been kind of when you start on one of these paths, you end up doing a whole lot of soul searching and a lot of introspection. And then after you do that, you start being able to heal yourself.
And that was kind of my next question too. When you kind of dive in, which I love how you were so open to all of this and just really learning, did you notice, like, during your transition of kind of taking all this information in, like, a drastic change in your vibration or your sensitivity? 'Cause I've kind of looked back on my own personal journey and just kind of seeing things that, you know, I'm energetically not really aligned with now that I could have been prior. So I'm wondering, 'cause it looks like you kind of just went all in, like we said. And did you notice like an energetic change or vibrational change?
Absolutely. Because, I spent like my entire adult life up through, I found Wicca when I was, I think it was 39 or 40 years old, something like that. And I had spent my entire adult life in either a military or public safety career. And so it was very frowned upon to have any kind of like alternative or new age kind of thoughts. And once I started down this path and this journey with having to tune in to different energies and then realize that there are different levels and different vibrations where you go along the path, it really helped me tune in and then further helped me open up to what other vibrational levels are and to then protect myself from certain vibrational levels, like some that you can run up against in the paranormal when you're a paranormal investigator and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I definitely want to touch on that too. If you want to start off by sharing a little bit about what The Witch's Cauldron is, your YouTube channel.
The Witch's Cauldron is inspired by the mythology of Ceridwen's Cauldron. I primarily practice in the Celtic pantheon because that's just what I was drawn to when I first put my foot on the path. And related ancestrally because of my, you know, family's beginnings in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, England, primarily. And Ceridwen's Cauldron is the cauldron of knowledge. And I wanted to bring knowledge to people who were seeking this path who might not have access to a coven or a tradition like I had where they could get really good, solid training. So many of the really popular Wiccan channels are all fluffy bunnies in I say fluffy bunnies in unicorns farting glitter.
Yeah.
That it's not really Wicca, and a lot of them never gave like the background, the roots of how Wicca came about, the history of it, the history of witches. And then it just turned in from, you know, the foundational stuff to then expanding into more advanced types of magic. There are very few resources out there for advanced magic or really the what I call beyond 101 stuff that you typically find on YouTube.
Yeah, I was, as I was going through, I saw that you actually have like courses and bookwork that people can join in and follow along, and it's super intensive, which is awesome. And you're completely right. I agree with you. There's not that many resources available to people who kind of want to open themselves up to this and really kind of dive in to the extent that you did. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, especially, I don't want to go into too much of a rant especially recently, when there are so many quote unquote witch talks and Pinterest witches, you know, and Insta witches and stuff like that. That's not where people need to go to get really good core knowledge and to completely understand how to align yourself with energy, harness it, focus the intent, and release it to really bring change around in your life. So, you know, that was another, I'm going to call it impetus for me to get off my butt in retirement and start this channel and say, listen, you know, put it out there. If the universe wants people to find it, they will find it. And hopefully it'll help somebody along on their path.
Right. That's awesome. So within the Witch's Cauldron, just a little bit of basic knowledge, or starting at the beginning, which I'm actually very curious. What is really the difference between pagans and Wiccans? And I know you mentioned High Priestess also, if you can kind of just go through those few words.
Okay. Pagan itself means country folk. So pagans are typically polytheistic, meaning having more than one god. They are also have an ancestral tie to their practices, and it's typically like an earth-based religion, where Wicca is not Wiccans are not technically pagan, and here's why. I've probably just made a lot of Wiccans start screaming when I say that. Wicca, when Gerald Gardner created Wicca, Wicca is not old. It's not even 100 years old yet. So it is not, you know, the craft of the wise and the old religion. Gerald Gardner borrowed high ceremonial magic from a lot of different places, from Egypt, from the Kabbalah, from, you know, here. And so there's no ancestral tie to Wicca. So that's why Wiccans aren't technically pagan, although most Wiccans will say that they are a pagan. And then a high priestess, in my trad, it varies by your practice. Okay, but typically the high priestess is the woman who is the head of the trad. You typically also have a high priest, or a head high priest and a head high priestess. Those are the two on top of the trad. And then you have, in some trads, you have what are called degrees. With my trad, you start as like an initiate, then you become a dedicant, you're a practitioner, you're an advanced practitioner, you're a priestess, you're an advanced priestess, and then it's head high priestess, okay? So it varies from trad to trad, but the high priestess not only has that teaching and mentoring aspect to it, they also have place in the ceremony, like the representation of, say, the union of the god and the goddess and the duality of, you know, the divine.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, because I know that they even are on tarot cards, so I wasn't exactly sure like the position or what a high priestess or priest was. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Also with pagan tradition, I noticed that there's a lot of different holidays and a totally different holiday calendar, and kind of like the moon cycles. Now, when you practice this, what can someone kind of get out of using kind of this cycle versus just like, I guess not?
Right. Well, the Wiccan wheel of the year is a little bit different than a lot of the pagan practices. Pagans typically, like straight heathenry, they recognize the solstices and the equinoxes. Okay, so a solstice is like the summer solstice is June 21st, 22nd, usually in there, and it's the longest day of the year. The winter solstice is December 21st, 22nd. It's the shortest day of the year. The equinoxes are in March is spring, September is the fall, and that is when the day and the night are equal. In Wicca, we also have what are called harvest festivals. So there are three harvest festivals, and then we also have like a pre-spring festival for Imbolc, which was last night into today. And the festivals and the equinox and solstice celebrations are a representation and a reminder of the god. The god is aligned with solar energy. He is the sun, okay? So you start out, our year starts at Samhain, which is October 31st. The god dies at Samhain. He is reborn at Yule, which is the winter solstice. And then the sun starts gaining power because the days start getting longer. Then we go through to Imbolc and to Ostara, which is, you know, the spring equinox. And then we go into Beltane and on through to Midsummer, Lunasa, Mabon, and then we're back to Samhain. So it's kind of representative of the life cycle of the god, okay? And then the lunar cycle is tied to the goddess. So in her various phases through Maiden, Mother, and Crone, that's, you know, a new moon is tied to the Maiden. And when it's waxing into a full moon, she has that Maiden new energy. That's the time for doing new things, for attracting things to you. Then the full moon, she's in her mother aspect, and she goes and the moon starts to wane a little bit, and that's when you want to get rid of things, to banish things, to repel things. And then in her crone phase is like from the last quarter through to the dark moon. That's when you do a lot of like shadow work, or good time to do baneful magic, things like that. Do your protections and stuff like that. So that's how those kind of reflect with each other. And then each full moon of the year has a different kind of like energy and name to it. Like January's was the wolf moon. So we go through all of those, and you kind of tailor your rituals, whether they be a sabbat, which is the wheel of the year following the god, or an esbat, which is the lunar cycle following the goddess, based on the energies of that time of year.
Wow, so it's really about kind of just tuning in with what time of the year it is, with the moon cycle, the holidays, and then kind of altering your practices based off of those.
Exactly, because there are certain energies that you want to tap into, you know, and bring forward based on what you want to do. Like, you know, a lot of people know that right now Mercury retrograde's in full swing, and I typically don't do any magic spells during a Mercury retrograde because they have a tendency to blow up in my face. So they can go a little bit awry, and you can have some outcomes that you don't expect. So, you know, it's all about tuning into the energy around you, tapping into what's already there at the universe, and realizing that you're all connected, not only just as humans, but you're connected to the energy of the rocks under your feet.
Interesting.
And you can pull that energy in harness it, focus it for a particular intent, and then send that intent out to the universe. I like to say that spells are like prayers with props.
Like,
so just think of it that way.
And even on your YouTube channel, I was looking through, and some of the spells that you could do for anyone listening at home, there are great beginner spells. I think you have like a 30-second spell. There's so much. And speaking of these spells, for anyone practicing at home, if you could talk a little bit about maybe white magic versus dark magic, or I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, and then maybe some protection techniques for anyone trying if they're not super comfortable with it just yet.
Well, I like to say that if you have a lot, and especially a lot of Wiccans, because the Wiccan read the last words of it as "in it harm none, do as ye will." People forget that the Wiccan read was not written until the 1960s. It was not part of Gerald Gardner's original dogma and plan for Wicca, okay? And they get stuck on that. So a lot of Wiccans don't even do any magic. They won't do, you know, they may do a little bit of protection magic, but it's like, oh no, I don't want to cast a spell because I might harm somebody. And the part of the read that they leave out is fairly give and fairly take. In other words, if somebody sends something my way baneful, you can bet I'm going to do everything I can to protect myself and send it back to them with what I call an escalation clause. In other words, I'll give it a threefold or a tenfold and give them what I call a witch slap. And so, you know, white magic is typically toward like healing, doing things like that. Those, I call them quote unquote noble intentions. Where black magic is what I call a baneful energy. And to be able to protect yourself from the baneful, you have to know the baneful and you have to learn about it and understand that energy. And it's kind of like to learn how to heal, you have to learn how to hurt first. It's that kind of energy. So, baneful magic is done, or quote unquote black magic is done, to bring harm to someone for a particular reason or for a period of time, or to curse a bloodline, something like that. Where white magic is typically healing, they have quote unquote green magic that are typically related to anything that is of the earth. So that's like herbs, crystals, things like that. And that's what people concentrate on. Then we have like gray magic. That's the stuff in the middle where, and that's where usually my feet are firmly planted. Because if you walk outside and you step on the grass, you're harming a blade of grass. So you can't go through life and not harm something along the way. All right.
Right, right. And it sounds like it's about intention too.
Exactly. It's all, the magic is neither white or black. It's all about the intent that the magical practitioner sets. So I realized that, you know, through all of my practices and everything, I have been lucky enough in my life to actually meet some very, very popular pagan authors, and like Dorothy Morrison and Ellen Dugan and Anne Mora and DJ Conway, who passed away this past year, and M.R. Sellers, and have taken classes from them. And they give you such a good background and understanding of magical ethics that say, you know, let's say you need $500 for new tires for your car, and you do a spell and you're like, you know, do your thing and blah, blah, blah. And I need $500 and I need it now because I need new tires. Well, you get a phone call 5 minutes later and your great aunt Tilly has kicked the bucket. She said, give, you know, Paula this envelope under my pillow, and under the pillow is an envelope with $500 in it. You didn't actually mean to kill great aunt Tilly to right. get your tires, but that happened to bring that about in your world. So Aunt Tilly was going to die anyway. It just so happened that was the way that the universe answered your need. So you can have the noblest of intentions and the noblest of needs and have unintended consequences for what you do.
Oh, that's an interesting explanation. I've never thought of it like that before, but it makes sense.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very hard to stay, like, pure white and not have any consequences at all, you know, to somebody, unless you're trying to heal. And even then, sometimes if you don't do it right, you can deplete yourself trying to heal somebody else.
Interesting. Now, along with kind of spell work, do you use personally any other divination tools? Like, I know that you have videos on tarot, astrology. Do you have like a preferred favorite?
Tarot is my go-to. But I love scrying with fire. I do water scrying, but my preferred is fire because I have a lot of fire in my chart. I'm a Leo. We're that fire energy. We're that fixed fire sign. I also do astrology. I also am a medium. So I do psychic readings for people. I do pendulum work when it calls me. The only one that I have never really kind of bonded with is runes. And for some reason, I just do not bond with doing the Elder Futhark runes.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually don't know too much about that. And I was going to ask if you could describe a little bit more of scrying, if you could share with the listeners kind of what it is and maybe the difference between the fire scrying and the water scrying, if there is any difference.
Well, scrying is, think of the crystal ball. Everybody thinks of the fortune teller and her crystal ball, right? The crystal ball is a form of scrying, and that is when you put yourself into a deep meditative state and you focus on an object like a candle or a fireplace or the fire pit or a bowl of water or even what's called a black mirror. And then images come to you in that object. So let's say, if I'm sorry about that, my dog was shaking.
Oh, you're good.
If I'm doing fire scrying and all of a sudden the flames start dancing in a particular way, they show me pictures and energy in my mind's eye. They like paint a picture for me with the flames. And it's the same thing, you know, when a lot of people can relate to Dumbledore's pensive in his office, you know, where he would put his memories.
Right.
That was a big scrying bowl because he could then go back and pull images from that bowl. Nostradamus was probably one of the most famous people who used scrying as a form of divination, and he would gaze into a bowl of water that he had floated ink on the top of it. And that's how he got his messages and his images. But it's part of putting yourself in that deep kind of meditative state and putting yourself on a higher vibrational plane so you can receive the messages.
And it sounds like there's so many different ways that you just mentioned that you can kind of do that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, anything, like, I have spheres that I can look into. I've got a black mirror that I made myself, which is simply like a photo frame, and you paint the back of the glass with a high gloss black paint. And then you make your scrying mirror out of that. So yeah, there are a whole lot of ways to do scrying, and that's one of my like quickest ways to do scrying, because I don't have to pull a deck out or anything like that. I can simply pick up my fluorite sphere and gaze into it and get images from it.
And when you're scrying, is it more of like a divination tool to where you have kind of like psychic downloads in your mind's eye, or is it more communication with the spirit world, or both?
It can be both, because you can actually tap into like the ancestors, your ancestors or your family, and say, can you come forward and show me XYZ, you know, whatever it is. Or it can be that helps you open yourself up to your spirit guides, your guardians, your angels, and your ascended masters, so that you are more receptive. So it can either be like an element like fire that you have an affinity for, showing you images. If you're very, you know, into, if you're kind of an emotional person, you may do better with water, because water rules your emotions. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different ways to do it, and you can do it through spirit, your guides, your guardians, your angels, or it can just be the messages that the universe or that element wants you to see.
Interesting. And I was going to save this for a little bit later when we talk about the paranormal, but since we're kind of on the subject, are there any protection techniques that you use that are different when it comes to like scrying? And like, let's say you kind of contact a spirit, I guess, how would someone know if it was who they say they are, or whether it's benevolent or not? If you have any tips on that.
Well, I don't recommend anyone who has no experience working with energy try and do something like have a Ouija board session.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, too.
Because if you don't know what you're doing, you can have big problems and cause big problems. There are ways to, like, whenever I do any kind of, like, psychic work, any kind of divination, anything like that, I do what's called casting a circle, and that is a witch's method of casting protection around her while she or he is doing magical work. I also have, because I have abilities, I'm like a beacon for spirit. I also live in the middle of a Civil War battlefield, so I have soldiers and spirits and slaves go through the house all the time.
That's a lot of energy there.
There's a whole lot of energy, because I'm only a mile away from a former working plantation. So plantations were really big, and this used to be part of where I live, used to be part of the plantation grounds. So, I have regular wards and protections up outside that are just general wards against like any baneful spirit or malevolent spirit coming through. I also have like protections up because I'm on YouTube. People like to test whether or not you are the real deal, so they'll cast hexes or curses, or what they think they're cursing, someone's way, So I have protections and like that are up for just general nuisance, trying to send a hex. And then I also have various crystals and everything around the house that are protective. Like I usually, when I do any kind of paranormal work, you can bet that I'm wearing or carrying black tourmaline with me.
Yeah, I was going to say that's kind of my go-to also. I have like a little one that I will carry in my pocket. But what do you think it is about Ouija boards? And is that kind of the only, I guess, paranormal investigation tool that kind of, because you don't really hear that much about like dowsing rods being super negative or the EMF meter. Is there something specific about the Ouija board, or you just think it's intention behind it?
For one thing, you know, Ouija boards began being marketed as a toy, and they're not toys. They're divination tools. And there is a specific procedure for opening the board. There are specific warning signs that you look for in the way that the board acts that may tell you, hey, I'm dealing with sort of a baneful spirit, or what people would call a demon, or, you know, something like that. And there are ways that you have to shut the board down. There's a proper way to open it. There's a proper way to shut it, you know. And a lot of people, when they pick up a Ouija board, number one, they're usually teenagers. They're fiddling around saying, okay, I saw this on XYZ movie, and let's see if we get something to come through. And if by dumb luck they do get something to come through, they usually get scared. And then they do something like either burn the Ouija board or they break it, and that just releases everything out and leaves an open portal. And that's why I say, if you don't know what you're doing and how to open and close a board and you're not experienced, you best just leave it alone.
Yeah, I have heard so many stories from people I know personally and just listening to podcasts and everything, and I feel like almost everyone who kind of uses it has some bizarre, not so great experience with it.
Yeah, I have friends who use Ouija boards as their preferred method of divination, and they have no problems. But they're also experienced witches that have at least 15 years of experience.
Right.
And they've been using them a long time. And one of the scariest cases I ever worked on as a paranormal investigator was a demonic entity literally torturing a 9-year-old girl, and it was because of a Ouija board.
Wow, yeah. Oof.
So, and I think I've got a video on Witch's Cauldron and on my paranormal channel on how to properly use a Ouija board, but it comes with a whole lot of caveats, because that is one method of divination I don't mess with.
Right.
I've never liked using Ouija boards, so I don't mess with them.
Yeah. So I'm the same here too. I really am not interested. I just am kind of, yeah, closed off to it, honestly. Yeah. And Paula, do you want to talk a little bit about your paranormal channel? Kind of what
sure.
It is?
Kind of dormant right now. I need to get back in gear on it, but yeah. I have a paranormal channel called Bulwarm Paranormal, and because I always get calls from folks, either from Witch's Cauldron or Twitter, you know, people DM me and say, listen, I've got this going on. What the heck can I do? I wanted to do like an educational channel about paranormal, that people say, well, how can I know, even like if a loved one has died, how do I know they came around? So I did a video on signs from the other side. And I also, over on Bull Run Paranormal, go into a little bit about like a soul's journey, you know, and journey from on the other side, and kind of like how things are organized and, you know, why certain things happen. So yeah, but I'm put out there, you know, I wanted to teach people, especially paranormal investigators. Not every paranormal investigator has had experience with, say, elementals. Not everyone has had experience with demons, or actually how to recognize the difference between like an attachment, someone being oppressed, an infestation, things like that, the different types of haunts. Because a lot of people go into paranormal investigation sort of like with Ouija boards, saying, oh boy, I downloaded this app on my phone, and right. Now I'm a paranormal investigator, and they go out there and they bring something home.
Now that brings up, oh, sorry, go ahead.
And that was one thing that I wanted to kind of educate people a little bit. Say, listen, this isn't TV. This isn't Ghost Adventures. You can, I mean, I've brought stuff home. And I'm an experienced paranormal investigator. And you have to be really diligent and safe. Even as a, like, if someone's a skeptic and they're like, well, I don't believe in any of that. Those are usually the people that end up get the first attachment.
And that's what I was going to ask too. This is a question that it keeps coming up, and I always mean to kind of like research it a little bit more. So if a group is going out and they're investigating together, would a spirit typically attach itself or kind of prey on maybe someone who has a lower vibration, someone who's kind of like down and out? Maybe depression or something like that? Or do they typically go after someone who has the highest vibration because it's kind of most attractive to them?
It depends on the spirit, okay? And I'm going to say, I have this thing, and if you're an a-hole in life, you're going to be an a-hole in spirit, okay? So if the person was a not nice spirit in life, they're probably not going to treat an investigator nicely, okay? If they're a pretty, you know, benevolent, protective spirit, they're not going to prey on anybody. But they're going to go to that person with that higher vibrational level because those people can sense that they're around and can often communicate with them easier. The a-hole spirit will go for the person with the lower vibrational level because it's easier to get an attachment. They can incite fear, incite anger, and especially if it's not just a spirit or it's a demon, although very, very rare, they feed off those kinds of emotions, and fear and anger feeds their energy, because that's a lower vibrational energy. So it all depends on the situation, and it all depends on the people involved, and it depends on the spirits involved.
Right. Now, do you think a lot of times spirits are just kind of stuck and they need to kind of move through into the light, or is it just kind of situation by situation?
It's situation by situation, because there are cases where there are what are called displaced souls. And those are people who met a tragic end and they, like, don't realize that they're dead. It's spirits that met a tragic end or a sudden end that have unfinished business. Like, you know, let's say a murder victim wants to see the person that did it to justice. So they're staying here trying to find somebody to communicate with to get them justice. It can also be someone who was a really bad person in life, and they fear, quote unquote, the thought of judgment day and having to face their sins and their choices. So they won't go in the light because they'd rather be in the middle of, like, you know, purgatory and roaming around and being a ghost than to go and, you know, have to atone for their actions that they had in this lifetime. So right. It's really situational. And then you've got things like residual energy, like especially in battlefields, where things just play over and over and over. It's like a movie loop.
To where it's kind of just like an energetic imprint, right?
Exactly. The people aren't actually stuck there. It's just an energetic imprint of what they experienced. Like, you know, up at Gettysburg, I have to go like with armor on when I go to Gettysburg because there's so much energy there.
Yeah, it's on my list. I really want to check it out. Do you have any favorite places that you've been to or overwhelmingly, I guess, intense locations that you've investigated before?
There have been several, and one is, you know, of course, battlefields. I live on the East Coast. I'm outside Washington, D.C. I'm in Virginia in the middle of civil war everywhere. So there is a lot of energy around that here, just naturally. And when you go to a battlefield, if you are a sensitive or a paranormal, like even a paranormal investigator, if you've done it any amount of time, you feel that kind of, I almost want to say like despair.
Right.
And the anxiety, like I find that my anxiety level goes up really high when I go to Gettysburg or somewhere like that. So yeah, they can affect you. I typically, my paranormal investigations are typically people's homes or their businesses. I don't do those like going to, say, Moundsville State Penitentiary or the Trans-Allegheny Insane Asylum or these big, almost like tourist attraction
right.
places. I don't do those. When I've been called in is because either people have had problems in their home and things are escalating, or businesses are starting to be affected. There was one restaurant we investigated where the ghost upstairs in this newly expanded dining room was locking women in the bathroom and he wouldn't let them out. and people were starting to say, listen, I'm not going there because I keep getting locked in the bathroom. So, and it actually happened to one of our investigators. She was in there setting up a camera and digital voice recorder, and she got locked in the bathroom for
wow.
like 10 minutes.
Are there any places that you by chance I'm in Los Angeles, and is there anywhere out here that you've researched? I noticed that there was a video on your channel about the Queen Mary.
I was going to say the Queen Mary is the big one out there, and then of course, you know, up in San Francisco, you've got the Winchester Mystery House. You know, there are all kinds of places out there. What's the one? There's a hospital there. Is it Lord Olinda Hospital?
Yeah.
Closed down hospital in LA?
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually really wanted to go there, but they changed it into, I think it's a retirement home now.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have
yeah,
you been?
Well,
oh, sorry.
That would have a lot of energy with it too, because you've got people, you know, geriatric people passing away
right.
all the time there.
Have you been to the Winchester Mystery House?
No, I haven't. I've never been to San Francisco.
Yeah, you'll have to
and
check
I would
it out.
Love to go there.
It's awesome. I didn't really feel a lot of energy when I was there, but just to kind of be there and walking through, taking the tour, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, that's on my kind of like travel bucket list when we're able to get out and go
right.
places again one of these days.
Right. And I know we don't have too much time left, but the way I actually found you on YouTube, I was Googling some stuff about cryptids. So I was wondering if you can touch on kind of what cryptids are, and I don't know if fairies are considered cryptids or trolls, and anything maybe otherworldly beings, elementals, if you could touch on that a little bit too.
All right. Well, cryptids are typically things that resemble an animal of some type, like a combination of form between human and animal. Like, I think I did a video on Skinwalker Ranch and skinwalkers. That's a cryptid. Because they can shapeshift and change form. Elementals are members of what are called the Fae, that most people call fairies. That's kind of like a pejorative term to the Fae. And I think I've got two videos on the Fae. I have one on Bull Run Paranormal, on the Unseelie Court, which are the darker side of the Fae, like brownies and things of that nature. Red caps is the other, where they can really do a lot of harm to a human. And then I have one on the Witch's Cauldron, on the Seelie Court, which are the more, we'll call it the light side of the Fae. But the Fae are very proud people. They're not Tinkerbell. And they're very old and powerful. They're very misunderstood. But elementals are a part of the Fae. So earth elementals are gnomes. They're like kind of short, stocky, really kind of burly looking, have bad attitudes. They typically don't like humans. You have then sylphs, which are air elementals. They look more like your typical, what we think of fairies. And they typically dwell like on high places, like cliffs and things like that. You then have what are called undines or ondines, which are water elementals, and they are present in rivers and oceans and seas. And then you have what are called salamanders, which are fire elementals. And, you know, they're kind of look like a regular, what you would think a salamander to look like. And they typically form in anywhere there is fire. And elementals typically do not interact with humans very often unless you disturb their habitat. Then they will come after you. There are certain, like at Beltane and a couple of the other Sabbats in the Wheel of the Year for a Wiccan, you can do work with the Fae. It's a good time to work with the Fae. And I typically leave offerings to keep them happy. I do not do what's called fairy magic because I don't want to piss them off. If you work with them in the improper way, you will regret it. And when Wiccans call their circle, we usually call the elements to come and join our rituals and things. So that's pretty much a lot of the extent, other than leaving offerings for the Fae to keep them happy. And they, for those who want to know, they like shiny stuff, like shiny bright new dimes or something like that, or sweetened cream. Put a little bit of sugar and cream, or sweetened butter that's got like a little bit of honey in it, or raw honey. So if you want to keep the Fae happy, that's what you do.
And you said that you will leave stuff for the Fae, and for anyone else who kind of is open to it, this is also interesting, another question that came to me, because so many people want to have supernatural experiences with ghosts and everything like this, but after hearing what you just explained, it sounds like there's so many almost species of these elementals and cryptids. And you said they typically don't interact with humans. Are they here for a different purpose, or is it just a different dimension that they're kind of on, that it's not really, we don't really have any...
Yeah, at one point they were on the same, we'll call it vibrational level as us, and then they raised their vibration so that they're here around us, but most people don't see them. And when you see them, it's like it'll be something like out of the corner of your eye, or you may see something like, you know, the bouncing lights in the forest at night. That's called a will of the wisp. And they can actually, if you follow them deep into the forest, they can get you lost and you can't get out. So it's all the point. There is all kinds of different types of the Fae. That's why I did the one on the Sealy Court on the Witch's Cauldron and the Unsealy Court on Bull Run. And then I believe I've got videos on both channels that explain the different types of the Fae, the elementals, working with nature spirits and things like that on both channels.
Awesome. So can anyone, just by kind of raising your vibration, if they wanted to interact with them or, you know, hopefully see one day, just by raising your vibration, you said it would make it more likely to kind of have an interaction?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some really good books. I believe DJ Conway has one on fairy magic that's really good. And I think Ellen Dugan is the other one that has a really good book on working with the Fae. And when you work with the Fae, it's all about showing proper respect. And knowing your limits, but like thinking of them in the realms of like Tinkerbell, little flitty things. No, that's not what the Fae are.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because so many people have the misconception that that's what it is.
Yeah, so. And it's not. They are so much more than that. And they're a very, very proud race. When I refer to them, I never refer to them as fairies. I call them the Fae or the Fair Folk, because I don't want people to have that picture of Tinkerbell in their mind when I'm talking about the Fae.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Paula. I have a couple roundup questions that I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
So you did mention that your sign's a Leo. I love Leos. My mom's a Leo. My sister's a Leo. Do you know your moon and your rising sign?
Of course I do. I'm a Scorpio rising and a Libra moon, and I am a Cancer Venus. So I am a mess.
You do have a lot going on there. I'm a Libra. My sun is a Libra, and I have a Leo moon. So maybe... That's where, like, our connection comes from.
Exactly.
For sure.
Well, I like having the Libra moon because it balances out my crazy-ass sun sign, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah, we have the opposite one then.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, let's see. Do you have a favorite book? I know you threw a couple names out there and authors, but do you have one that kind of is your favorite?
You're going to find this really weird. And because I still find comfort in it, and it's the Holy Bible. I still find comfort in like some of the Psalms and the stories and the lessons and the parables and everything like that. So that's my favorite.
That's awesome, honestly. Yeah. I actually want to go through and read it, just doing the work that I'm doing now on the side. And I was raised Christian, and I appreciate my roots, and I really... yeah, I totally want to. I agree with you. Good choice. Do you have a favorite self-care practice? I know you deal so much with energy. Is there anything that you use that is really focused on self-care that you could recommend to any of the listeners?
There are three things that I do on a pretty routine basis. And one is I meditate every single day. And I probably meditate at least 5 minutes every, say, 2, 3, 4 times a day. I also have from time to time. Once a week, I do what I call my quote-unquote energy cleanse, and I do a ritual bath and combine Reiki into the bath water, and I do a bath tea that I make up that just kind of soothes my aura and cleanses my energy from any kind of, like, especially if I've had a particularly, like, a lot of anxiety or anger or whatever, I'll do that, and then that'll, like, whoosh, it all goes down the drain. And then a few times a year, I do what is called shadow work. And that's where you take a look at the parts of you that you don't like so much. And I'm not talking, like, physically. I'm talking energetically. And experiences that you've gone through in your life that where, let's say, you felt like a failure or a traumatic event. Like, for me, you know, I had to work on my own father and do CPR and stuff on my own father. That was pretty traumatic because he passed. And take those events, look at them as if you were a third party and look in on them and learn to accept them and embrace them because they helped form who you are. And when you make peace with those traumatic experiences, and my mother was so smart. She used to always say, there is a lesson and a blessing in everything that you go through. You just have to open your eyes and your heart to find them. And even the most traumatic experiences, like being at the Pentagon on 9/11, part of my job in public safety, even all of that, I can make peace with it by doing shadow work. So that a lot of times emotionally we tend to put those things up on in a box on a shelf and we say we'll deal with it later, and then later the shelf crumbles and everything comes tumbling down on top of you. I have found that doing shadow work and learning to accept those traumas keeps my shelf from collapsing.
Yeah. And that's beautiful. It's self-healing.
Yeah.
And it's like you're rewriting the past.
Well, yeah. And it's like looking hard for that. What was I supposed to learn? Because your soul incarnation, you go through many lifetimes, and each lifetime you're supposed to pick up lessons along the way. I look at them and say, what lesson was I supposed to learn? And because of this experience, did I realize a blessing somewhere along the way?
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Paula.
Well, thank you. I have enjoyed it so much.
Well, I listed below in the show notes where you can get the links to Paula's social media. So she's on Facebook under Bull Run Paranormal, at Bull Run Paranormal. She is on Twitter at The Witches Call 1, TWEWITCHESCAUL 1. Or you can follow her two YouTube channels, Bull Run Paranormal and The Witches Cauldron, both on YouTube. But like I said, I have them linked below, so you should be able to just access them through this episode.